Welcome to Dare to Struggle, Dare to Win, a monthly podcast by the U.S. Human Rights Network addressing human rights issues in the United States. This podcast examines the 10th commemoration of the World Conference Against Racism held in Durban, South Africa, and the Durban Declaration and Program of Action. It features two members of the Durban Plus 10 Coalition, convened by the U.S. Human Rights Network and the World Against Racism Network. These members are Ifeah Wangaza with the Malcolm X Grassroots Movement Center for Self-Determination in Greenville, South Carolina, and Saladin Muhammad with Black Workers for Justice in Rocky Mountain, North Carolina. Together, they explore the current relevancy of the Durban Declaration and Program of Action to the struggle for social justice here in the United States. How are the two of you doing today?
Wonderful, thank you.
We wanted to talk about the Durban Plus 10 commemoration, which took place in New York City in September, which both of you attended. We have a few questions we really just wanted to have you expound upon for our audience. The first question, for those who were not able to attend the Third World Conference Against Racism, Xenophobia, and Related Intolerances in Durban, South Africa in September 2001, we want you to both to kind of please provide us with a snapshot of its critical importance to the global struggle against racism and, in particular, the struggles of African people throughout the world.
Well, I mean, first of all, I think it's important to recognize that the conference, the World Conference Against Racism, being held in South Africa was significant as the struggle against apartheid, you know, white supremacy that represented, you know, I guess all of the examples, you know, of a structural racism, you know, that Africans and people of African descent around the world experience. It being held in South Africa was important, and I think that it drew a lot of people there from around the world, hoping that that it would also set a direction for the ongoing struggle against racism. I've been to a number of conferences in my life, you know, and some international conferences, but I guess this was the conference where, you know, African people, people of color from all around the world, you know, nationalities, ethnics, indigenous people that, you know, I've never heard of, you know, they were all there. Lots of women who have been active leaders and raising issues, I think, that could have only been raised at that conference. So I think it was very, very, very significant because it showed just how widespread structural racism is, what the impact of the slave trade, the international slave trade was or has been, and the continuing impacts that come from the structural racism that was built on international slavery. So it had all kinds of workshops, labor, women, environmental, you can name it, and it allowed, I think, a level of internationalism between people of color to be forged. And expressions of solidarity to be shown in rallies, cultural events, and the like. So, I mean, that's just my thumbnail statement of the significance of it. I think we came away out of there with a program, the Durban Declaration Program of Action, that represented the beginnings of addressing structural racism as part of the struggle for global justice, which had not been placed at such a high level until that time.
I would add to that in the long term that it provided an opportunity for people of color, generally people of African descent specifically, to begin to develop the infrastructure that, at least in theory, came out of the Van Dung Conference. We had an opportunity for verbal and ideological exchange. We had an opportunity to struggle with one another around the language that would ultimately become the Durban Declaration and Program of Action, and to, on that basis, develop a structure and process for long-term work and ongoing communication. And that, I think, are the hallmarks of the World Conference of 2001.
Just for perhaps some younger members in our audience, Sophia, can you just give us a quick breakdown of the Van Dung Conference? As you mentioned that, I just want to make sure that everyone understands what that was and what its importance was, just briefly.
Briefly, the Van Dung Conference was, I believe, held in 1954, and someone may have a better memory recollection, but as to the year, but the object of it was of countries formerly colonized by the West, by European countries, came together for the purposes of identifying and advancing the common welfare of all of the formerly colonized countries, which, of course, were countries of color, Asia and Africa as well as Africa. We often hear Malcolm mention the Van Dung Conference and the fact that no colonizers, no white folks or white countries were allowed to attend the Van Dung Conference, and no folk from the various countries spoke different languages and had the various diversities that we have even to this day. There was a common understanding of the common experience that we all have had, and its continuing impact and the benefits of our working together to address the deprivation that persists as a result of colonization, slavery, and apartheid.
Mm-hmm. All right, to the next question. You are both members of the Durban Plus 10 Coalition and recently attended the Durban Plus 10 commemoration events in New York City that we mentioned earlier. If you can, both explain from your vantage point why it was essential to protect the Durban Declaration and Program of Action, also known as the DDPA, from the attacks it was receiving from the colonial settler nation states like the U.S., Canada, England, Germany, Israel, and Australia. And that's a critical question we definitely want conveyed to the audience. And then if you can, just touch on what importance does this program of action have for social movements here in the United States?
Well, I would say that precisely because it was under the Durban Declaration and Program of Action is under attack by the former colonialists, although the former isn't a very operative word in given their continuing control of the planet, especially the United States. But precisely because they are colonial settler states attempting to undermine our efforts to strengthen and enhance the campaign to throw off their yoke, we have to, at every assault, respond. They have continued to refuse to acknowledge or renounce their misconduct, their human rights violations. None of them have paid reparations to Africans or African countries for past and present white supremacist practices, which they continue to maintain and have continued to benefit from, and from which we continue to be deprived. So we have no choice but to, in our resistance, defend those the possible opportunities for resisting the onslaught. Also, it's important to protect the Durban Declaration and Program of Action in order to maintain the structure and process of communication that I mentioned earlier that allows us to at least on a virtual level to claim unity, a united front, and to be in the process of joining forces and reaching the unity that's necessary to defeat them as they have reached their own unity to attack us. They establishing an operational standard by which to measure U.S. claims is critical. Addressing the wide-ranging disparities that continue to plague Africans here in the United States and abroad, to not allow the United States to continue to present itself as the gold standard for human rights, but to at every turn expose the hypocrisy and the inconsistency of the United States and other Western countries, and to discourage developing countries that would take that model, the model of passing legislation to address ills, but failing, indeed refusing to enforce legislation, domestic legislation, or to live up to international treaty obligations and international law in its quest for continued white supremacy or white domination.
Well, I certainly can't add much more to that, but I think that it is especially important for, you know, African people, you know, people of African descent in the U.S. To be front and center in fighting to defend the DDPA. One, because of this so-called image of a so-called post-racial society that the election of Obama, you know, is has attempted, you know, to promote and to show that despite even the election, you know, of a black president, that this government is unwilling to be accountable to international standards and a program of action that struggles against structural racism. It would seem to me that the election of a black president, you know, would also include the country identifying with the DDPA as it would be seen as just a step in a direction of eliminating racism that is deeper than just, you know, the face, you know, in the White House. So I think that's extremely important that the black people are front and center so that we don't go to sleep on this issue. I think the other important thing is that the U.S. and the global economy is in a real crisis, a crisis, you know, that it is continually sacrificing, you know, everybody, but especially those who have been at the bottom throughout the history of the development of capitalism in the global economy. To address the Durban Declaration Program of Action, it would mean that this 1% that controls most of the wealth in this country that the Occupy Wall Street movement is beginning to expose, that wealth, some of that wealth would have to be used to address these disparities that reflect the historical oppression of African peoples and peoples of color throughout the world. So part of the reason why the U.S. and other countries, you know, who were core to the slave trade and continue, as Sister Fear said, to carry out, you know, expressions, you know, of the slave of modern day slavery, that they know that true accountability is more than just an apology. It means that they would have to use some of this wealth and some of this resources to address the disparities that that the system continues to cause. So this Declaration Program of Action is a human rights program, and is demanding that wealth and resources and power be used to ensure human rights for all people. So I think, you know, it's important to also recognize what these countries are trying to defend.
Mm-hmm. Our last question, you know, with as always, with an initiative like the Durban Plus 10 Coalition and the mobilization for the Durban Plus 10 commemoration, is where do we go from here? You know, how do we make sure that more activists, people's organizations, and grassroots forces know about the Durban Declaration and Program of Action and work being done to implement it here in the U.S.?
I would say that the first of all, that we have to incorporate it in our work, and we say that about everything that we embrace, the various treaties and such. I think that it's particularly critical to incorporate the Durban Declaration and Program of Action in our work in raising the standard, especially with regard to reparations, in light of the fact that the declaration declares the enslavement of African people as having been a crime against humanity and therefore without a statute of limitations, to revive the reparations movement and the sense of entitlement that energized that movement in recent years. So I think that that's it's critical in that regard. The incorporation is critical in that regard, and specifically and generally in raising the level of expectation and the measures of the U.S. government by having the program of action as an other standard by which to evaluate its purported compliance with its international obligations, its human rights obligations, despite the fact that it, of course, repeatedly walks out and after having attempted to undermine the process. And thirdly, I would say that we need to build the demand for a decade of for people of African descent. You know, we coming out of the year for people of African descent, which very little was done, about which very little was done, and even the United Nations did very little around it. In fact, insulted us by not making more of it, developing greater public visibility, public education, awarding only $97,000 to the commemoration of the DDP in the year to recognize people of African descent. So I think that we ought call for the decade of people of African descent in order to insert ourselves in the traditional process that has been applied to various other peoples whose human rights have been catastrophically violated, and also to assert our own dignity in demanding our just desserts. You know, if it's done for other peoples, other causes, then we want equal access to the international arena and to international resources in order to have our dignity as people affirmed. So, I think that is goes across the board with every issue with which we are struggling, and is inherent in every human rights treaty and declaration.
I think this is a very important moment, this kind of popular upsurge you know, despite some weaknesses in pointing to, you know, the concentration of wealth and identifying, you know, where many of the social problems, you know, are coming from, and a call, you know, for that wealth to be used to address the human needs of the people. I think that the call for accountability to the Durban Declaration Program of Action should become part of should also be raised in the Occupy Wall Street movement that's spreading around the country, because it puts into this movement demands that speak concretely to addressing the problems of people of African descent that has been caused by systems of capitalist accumulation, which began with the international slave system. So it's extremely important, I think, for us to utilize the media coverage and the consciousness raising, you know, about economic disparities to push, raise the issue of the Durban Declaration Program of Action and the issue of reparations as part of addressing the issue of the economic disparity. I think in this way, it would also help, you know, to promote the need to be accountable to the Durban Declaration Program of Action, and could help to raise to the international community, the UN, et cetera, you know, that this is a demand, you know, that that's resonating in the human rights and social justice movement throughout the United States and spreading internationally.
All right. Afia and Saladin, I want to thank you both on behalf of the network for participating in this broadcast, and thank you for your insights and your work on this issue and so many others. Thank you.
The U.S. Human Rights Network is dedicated to building a people-centered human rights movement in the United States. For more information about the network and how to become a member, visit www.ushrnetwork.org. We also want to hear your feedback. Get in touch with us by emailing info@ushrnetwork.org. Thanks for listening to Dare to Struggle, Dare to Win. Join us next month.